and welcome to the Old Time Radio Hour. I'm your host, Justine Ward, and each week we bring you a classic show from radio's golden age. To celebrate the 4th of July holiday, we have 2 half-hour shows. First, we have lots of laughs with Our Miss Brooks, Trip to Eagle Spring, and after that, we have the story of the national anthem on Cavalcade. Our Miss Brooks is having a hard time pleasing Principal Conklin, especially after she accidentally broke his glasses. If she can get away for the 4th of July holiday, I'm sure he'll calm down. Enjoy her adventure in Our Miss Brooks, first broadcast July 3rd, 1949 on CBS.
Palm Olive Soap, your beauty hope, and Luster Cream Shampoo for soft, glamorous, caressable hair bring you Our Miss Brooks, starring Eve Arden. When the 4th of July weekend arrived at Madison High Summer School, it was welcomed most enthusiastically by Our Miss Brooks, who teaches English there.
I don't know why I looked forward to such a brief holiday with such keen anticipation. I like my work, and I'm very fond of my pupils. Then there's the school principal, Mr. Osgood Conklin. Well, what do you know? I just found out why I look forward to such a brief holiday with such keen anticipation. Mr. Conklin and I never have been what the scientists call chemical affinities. But last week, we really reached the ultimate in mutual harassment. I would hesitate to describe Mr. Conklin's temper as volcanic, but by last Thursday, I would swear I saw a thin trickle of lava flowing out of his ears. I was telling my landlady, Mrs. Davis, about it Friday morning at breakfast. He hasn't been this irritable since last month when I broke his new glasses.
My goodness, Connie, how did you do that?
It was an accident, Mrs. Davis. They broke when we both bent down at the same time.
You both bent down?
Yes, to pick up a hammer I had dropped on his foot.
Osgood is certainly hard to get along with. Connie, did you say you wanted tea or coffee this morning?
I said I wanted milk, Mrs. Davis.
Oh, of course you did. I'm getting so absent-minded lately. Almost as bad as my sister Angela.
How is Angela, Mrs. Davis?
Angela?
Your sister.
Oh. She's terribly absent-minded, poor dear. Why, the other morning, do you know what she did?
No, what?
She found herself with 1 foot in the bathtub and 1 foot out of the bathtub.
Well, there's nothing absent-minded about that. It happens to most of us, sooner or later.
But Angela couldn't remember whether she was just getting into the tub. Or whether she was just getting out.
Well, that is a dilemma. What did she do?
She let the water out and took a shower. Now, I'd better get you that hot chocolate you wanted.
It's milk, Mrs. Davis, and it's right here on the table. Can I pour some for you?
Oh, no thanks, Connie. I never drink milk in the morning. It keeps me up all day.
Maybe we should have gone on talking about Mr. Conklin.
Say, that reminds me, Connie. How's Mr. Conklin been treating you lately?
You should have seen him yesterday when I stopped in at his office to get my check.
Was he very disagreeable, Connie?
Not at first. That's what's so confusing. When I sat down to sign for the check, he was extremely civil to me, almost courteous. And then in a few seconds, boom, his whole attitude changed.
But why?
That's what I'd like to know. You think I spilled that bottle of ink on his coat purposely?
Oh, Connie. Not a bottle of ink.
I couldn't help it, Mrs. Davis, and I tried my best to get out the spots.
With what?
With spot remover, of course. Or at least I thought it was spot remover. It isn't my fault that Mr. Conklin keeps ammonia in his desk, is it?
Ammonia? But, Connie, ammonia will just burn right through the cloth.
Please, Mrs. Davis, you sound just like Mr. Conklin. But I won't be running into him for the next few days, thank goodness. I'm going away for the July 4th weekend.
But, Connie, can you afford to go away?
On my salary, I can't afford to stay home. But I've made up my mind to do it if I have to go without lunch for a week. And guess where I'm going, Mrs. Davis?
Where?
To Eagle Springs. And guess what bashful scientist is going to get the surprise of his life because he's going there, too, and doesn't know I'm coming?
It's not Mr. Boynton.
It ain't Al Einstein. Now, if you'll excuse me, Mrs. Davis, I'll get ready for school. Walter Denton should be picking me up pretty soon.
Oh, I'm sorry, Connie, but there's something I forgot to tell you. Walter called while you were in the shower and said he can't pick you up this morning.
Oh, great. My car won't budge.
What's the matter with it, Connie?
I don't know exactly. Last time I went out to the garage to look at it, it was lying on its side, panting.
Walter said he hoped you'd understand, but he had to drive Mr. Conklin to the doctor's this morning.
The doctor's? Why, that's a shame. I wonder what's wrong with poor Mr. Conklin.
Well, Osgood, I can't seem to find anything radically wrong with your physical condition, outside of a slightly elevated blood pressure, that is.
What is my blood pressure, Dr. Haney?
Oh, nothing to worry about, Osgood. Around 180, I'd say. Of course, if it gets to 200, I'd advise you to sell.
If there's one thing I've always wanted, it's a comical physician. Now tell me, Doctor, what's wrong with me?
Well, I can't discover any physical symptoms, Osgood, but there's no doubt about it. Something seems to be troubling you mentally. Now, what is it?
It isn't a what, it's a who. And what a who. Even when we're not together, I can still see her face before me.
But Osgood, who is this woman?
It's Miss Brooks, Doctor. She teaches English at Madison.
It seems to me, Osgood, if Miss Brooks grates on your nerves so much, you shouldn't let her cross your path. Avoid contact with her whenever possible. As a matter of fact, I recommend that you leave town for a few days.
That's it. I'll do it. I'll go away for the 4th of July weekend. But where?
Oh, it doesn't matter where. Do your world of good to get away for a few days. Say, now, maybe I can help you.
You?
Why, sure. I know the squaw in charge of reservations on the chief. Oh,
It will be good to get away.
Miss Brooks, you're just the person I wanted to see.
Good morning, Harriet. What can I do for you?
It's Daddy, Miss Brooks. I'm real worried about him. Last night he cried out in his sleep several times. Mother had to keep waking him up, and once in his sleep he screamed out your name.
My name?
Yes. That's when Mother had to tie him to the bed.
I think I can explain your father's nocturnal penchant for screaming my name, Harriet. We've spent the better part of this week exchanging unpleasantries.
Then Daddy did have words with you?
Harriet, your daddy had words that I wouldn't repeat in front of a sailor.
He was extremely nervous this morning when Walter Denton drove him to the doctor's.
Well, I hope his doctor has a good doctor. Now, if you'll excuse me, Harriet, I'll run along to class.
Just a minute, Miss Brooks. Here's Daddy now.
Oh, good morning, Harriet. Well, the doctor says there's nothing wrong with me physically at all.
I knew it. You look better already.
Thank you, my dear.
Good morning, Mr. Conklin. He just took a turn for the worse.
Good morning, Miss Brooks. So far, I'd better get into my office now. I'll see you later, Harry.
All right, Daddy. But what's the umbrella for?
It looked like rain when I left for the doctor's. Oh, by the way, it's a rather sturdy umbrella, Miss Brooks. Care to whack me over the head with it to start off the day?
Oh, of course not, Mr. Conklin.
You're sure now?
I'll take a rain check. I mean, I'm positive. Oh, hold still a minute, Mr. Conklin. There's a thread hanging from the lapel of your coat. I'll pull it out for you.
You needn't bother.
It's no bother. I'll pull it out in just a second. There, that does it. No, there seems to be more. Hold still, please.
I'm waiting, Miss Brooks.
I'm pulling, Mr. Conklin.
His lapel looks all right, Miss Brooks.
Oh, I'm getting it now. This is a new suit, Mr. Conklin?
Yes. Yes, it is. No doubt you remember my old suit, Miss Brooks. The one with the ink spots.
Ink spots? How in the world did you get... Oh, that one.
Yes, that one. I thought you'd like to know that I cleaned Walter Denton's windshield with it this morning.
Well, it certainly needed it. I mean, I'm sorry about your suit, Mr. Conklin, but... Say, this is funny. There doesn't seem to be any end to this thread.
So I see. Miss Brooks, would you be good enough to give me the ball of thread you're holding in your hand? I'll have another lapel sewn on.
Oh, forgive me, Mr. Conklin. I didn't realize...
My brand new suit. Two pairs of pants and one lapel. Let me in that office immediately, huh?
Step aside, Harry.
But, Daddy... Daddy seems quite annoyed at you this morning, doesn't he, Miss Brooks?
I think so. In fact, there's an old Eskimo saying that describes his feelings toward me perfectly. It goes, Pulikamu Conakrio Exro.
What does that mean?
Baby, it's cold outside.
Miss Brooks, starring Eve Arden, will continue in just a moment. But first, here is Vern Smith.
Here's wonderful news, ladies. Wonderful, wonderful news. Now there's something thrillingly new in Palmolive Soap's famous beauty lather. Yes, something thrillingly new. Palmolive's famous beauty lather now brings you new fragrance, new charm, new allure.
Millions of women will prefer beauty lather Palmolive over all other leading toilet soaps the minute they try it. For Palmolive Soap's famous beauty lather... now has a new, clean, flower-fresh fragrance for new allure, new charm.
So, ladies, forget all other beauty care and use Palmolive soap the way doctors advised for a lovelier complexion. Just stop improper cleansing and instead wash your face with Palmolive soap 3 times a day, massaging Palmolive's wonderful beauty lather onto your skin for 60 seconds each time to get its full beautifying effect. Then rinse. That's all. All types of skin, young, older, oily, respond to it quickly. Don't wait another day to try Palmolive's beauty lather. You'll be thrilled by its new fragrance, new charm, new allure. Thrilled again by the fresher, brighter complexion doctors prove may soon be yours.
For new loveliness all over, use big bath-size Palmolive in tub or shower.
Well, I had no further encounters with Mr. Conklin during my first class, and while waiting for another session to begin, I was bolstered by the thought that I'd soon be on my way to Eagle Springs for the 4th of July weekend. While I was marking some composition papers, Walter Denton returned from the errand I'd sent him on.
Excuse me, Miss Brooks, but I'm back.
Did you get me a ticket to Eagle Springs, Walter?
Sure, Miss Brooks, but first I told Mr. Boynton I was going to the railroad station on an errand, and then I volunteered to pick up his ticket to Eagle Springs for him, and when he gave me the money, I just added what you'd given me and bought 2 tickets, seats 208 and 209 in the parlor car, right smack up against each other.
Why, Walter Denton, where did you ever get such a diabolical scheme?
From you. Now, don't you remember, Miss Brooks, you laid the whole thing out for me?
Never mind, Walter. Are you sure the seats are together?
Positive. And it was a lucky break I got any seats at all. The trains are sure crowded for this 4th of July weekend. Gosh, the station was alive with travelers.
Those are the best kind. Now, look, Walter. You have got to promise me you won't mention my trip to a soul. I don't want Mr. Boynton to know I'm going to Eagle Springs until he sits down next to me on that train.
You have my word as a gentleman and a scholar.
I've just read your composition. Your word as a gentleman will do.
No, all kidding aside, Miss Brooks, how did you like my composition? Great baseball yarn, isn't it?
Frankly, Walter, it's a little hard for me to judge. I know how crazy you are about baseball. I'd like to be fair in marking your composition, but, well, this time you've really got me stumped.
But why?
Maybe it's because the first 6 pages contain nothing but the American League box scores.
I just put that in to make it more dramatic.
Well, some of it is pretty exciting at that. I remember one very eloquent phrase that keeps recurring in the story. Had me right on the edge of my seat. Let me find it. Oh, here it is. Coleman to Sternweiss to Phillips.
That's a famous double play combination. You know, on the Yankees.
Oh, Yankees, of course. The Northern team. Well, you'd better be getting on to your next class.
Now, okay, Miss Brooks. Oh, before I go, is there anything I can do for you while you're out of town?
Yes, Walter. Come to think of it, there is something you can do. You'll probably be seeing a lot of Harriet Conklin over the weekend, won't you?
That's for sure.
Well, you can do me this one big favor. Whenever Mr. Conklin's in the vicinity, please don't mention my name.
When Mr. Conklin's in the vicinity, I'm usually not. He hates me, you know.
You're not the only one. But just don't talk about me when he's around. I'm hoping he'll cool down a bit while I'm away. Oh, there's that pesky fly again. He's been in here all morning.
I'll be darned if I'd hang around summer school all day if I was a fly.
Maybe he needs the credit. Hand me that fly swatter, Walter. Thanks.
Oh, he lit over here on the door, Miss Brooks. I'll open it and let him fly out.
No, don't, Walter. He looks like a germ carrier. I think I've got a good bead on the little pest. Here goes.
Fortunately, I get my glasses wholesale.
Mr. Conklin.
And now that you've warmed up, Miss Brooks, how about trying the umbrella?
It was an accident, Mr. Conklin. Miss Brooks didn't mean to hit you. She was after that other pest. I mean, the fly.
Well, if it isn't Walter Denton. I've hit the jackpot this time.
Oh, please, Mr. Conklin, if you'll just sit down a minute.
Yeah, Mr. Conklin, just have a seat. I'll gather your glasses for you.
Yes. Oh, Denton.
Yes, sir?
Get out!
Yes, sir! That is, yes, sir.
Miss Brooks. The reason I came in here was to inform you, as I have the other members of the faculty, that I'm going away for a while.
Away? For how long, Mr. Conklin?
Well, this morning I planned on staying away for just 3 days. But then, when you siphoned off one of my lapels, I decided to make it 4 or 5. And just now, when you flogged me with that fly swatter, I realized I'll need at least a week.
Mr. Conklin, I won't deny that a series of extremely unfortunate incidents have occurred.
How very broad-minded of you. Well, there won't be any more of them for me, at least not for the next week. I always thought I was a man of more than average courage, Miss Brooks, but I've discovered recently that I'm not.
Please, Mr. Conklin.
Oh, it's true. I am a coward, Miss Brooks. But be that as it may, I am determined to live long enough to be an old coward. Hence, I am about to flee the city.
But where are you going, Mr. Conklin?
I don't know yet. I've called the railroad station, but their trains are all jammed with 4th of July weekenders. However...
Yes, I know. It's very crowded on almost all the trains.
I haven't finished talking, Miss Brooks. I was about to say... However, I'm going to try the airport this afternoon. Maybe I can get a plane for somewhere. Oh, that's a very annoying fly.
Oh, I've got the swatter, Mr. Conklin. I'll get it this time. You just sit still.
No, I'll get out of this seat if you don't mind.
You got up, Mr. Conklin.
As I was saying, Miss Brooks, I'll go to the airport. If I can't get a plane from somewhere, I may fly somewhere without a plane!
And so, class, it only requires a little concentration to avoid embarrassing mistakes in conversation. We'll take up next the works of Lord Byron. That's all for now. Class dismissed, and have a nice weekend.
Oh, excuse me, Miss Brooks. Could I see you for a minute?
Why, Mr. Boynton, you may see me for longer than that. Come in, won't you?
I just wanted to say goodbye, Miss Brooks.
Oh? Going somewhere?
Yes. Walter Denton just got me a ticket on the 4:15 to Eagle Springs. I'm going to spend the 4th of July weekend up there.
How nice for you, Mr. Boynton. It should do you a world of good.
Yes, I really need the rest. I've been working pretty hard lately. Still, I want you to know I'll miss our regular Friday afternoon date, Miss Brooks.
I don't see why. That was a pretty tiresome crowd we were running around with.
Miss Brooks, we went to the zoo on Fridays.
That's what I mean. Every week, the same old hairy faces.
Well, it does a man good to get away from town every so often. Gives him a chance to think things out. Commune with nature, as it were. You know, I like to get next to Mother Nature once in a while.
Now, isn't that funny? I feel the same way about Father Nature. That is, I'm sure you'll have a lovely time, Mr. Boynton.
I knew you'd understand, Miss Brooks. Walter got me a seat in the parlor car. They usually come in twos, you know.
Do they?
Yes, I hope someone nice sits next to me. It's quite a long trip, and a friendly traveling companion can make the time pass much more pleasantly.
I'm sure you'll draw the doll of the world.
No, not me. Just my luck. I'll probably wind up alongside some big fat dunce.
Do not like him. I mean, it's silly to even speculate about your train partner, Mr. Boynton. Forget it for now.
Well, if only he has a good sense of humor. I remember the last trip I took to New York. On my way back, I sat right next to George S. Kaufman, the famous playwright.
Really? How was his sense of humor?
You'd be surprised. It wasn't so good. I told him one of my best gags, too. You know the one where I make my shoes squeak on purpose? Well, when Kaufman asked me if they were new shoes, I said, "Shoes, nothing. Those are my Blue Jay corn plasters chirping." Now, you know that's funny.
It's a scream. How did Mr. Kaufman react?
He took two Alka-Seltzers and went to sleep.
Probably jealous because he didn't make it up.
Well, I guess I better be leaving now, Miss Brooks. I've still got to say goodbye to Mr. Conklin.
Well, whatever you do, don't mention my name to him. This is one of my bad days.
Miss Brooks, you shouldn't fight with Mr. Conklin.
I'm not fighting with him, Mr. Boynton. Why, Mr. Conklin would be the first to admit that we'd get along splendidly together if it weren't for just one thing.
What's that?
Me.
Come in.
I just dropped in to say goodbye, Mr. Conklin.
Oh, sit down a minute, Boynton. I'm just getting some information from the Travel Bureau. What did you say the name of that train was again? The Snake Eyes Limited? No, I'm afraid I don't care to go as far as Las Vegas. Goodbye. Now then, you were saying?
Just goodbye, Mr. Conklin. I'm going up to Eagle Springs for the weekend.
Eagle Springs? But you won't be able to get a train ticket. I've tried every which way to get out of this town, but it's just impossible.
Oh, not for me, it isn't. I've got my ticket right here, seat 209 in the parlor car on the 415.
Well, let's see that ticket, Boynton.
Well, I'll be running along now, if you don't mind.
Just a moment, Boynton. Boynton, I've always looked upon you as one of the outstanding members of Madison's faculty. Not just as a teacher, mind, although you're one of the best.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Conklin.
But also as a human being. You, Boynton, are the type of chap who would never let anyone down.
Oh, gosh, Mr. Conklin.
That's why I know you'll sell me that ticket and postpone your own vacation.
Postpone it? But, Mr. Conklin, I can't.
Can't? In the vocabulary of a Madison High School teacher, there is no such word as can't.
Well, then I won't. Oh, I'm sorry, sir, but I've worked very hard for this vacation,
Of course you have, my boy. It was selfish of me to even suggest that you give me your ticket on the train. The fact that I'm on the verge of complete mental breakdown should not sway you in the slightest.
Mental breakdown? Well, I'm sorry to hear that, Mr. Conklin.
Oh, chin up, boy. Wipe that frown from your face. You should be smiling. You're going on a trip. A happy, carefree trip. Forget about me trembling in my stuffy little office. You're on the train, boy. I can see you now, sitting there in that plush parlor car, the sun streaming through the windows. What's this? Conductor is approaching. Tickets? Tickets, please. Where's your ticket?
Here it is.
Thanks, Boynton. I knew you'd come through.
Here you are, miss. Seat 208.
Thank you.
Now, this bag belongs to the gentleman in the next seat. He went back to the smoking car just before we pulled out.
Oh, that's perfect. Now I can really surprise him.
Oh, you know him?
Not as well as I'm going to. That is, we've never been on a vacation together before.
Oh, that's the fellow coming down the aisle there. Oh, yes. He's got adhesive tape on his glasses.
What? Are you sure that's the man who has seat 209?
Positive. I parked him here myself.
Oh, well, if you'll excuse me, I'm going to face the window before he sits down.
What for?
If he sees me before he sits down, he'll fall down.
Oh, I get it. It's a rib. Tickets.
205, 207. Now, here we are, 209. Hi-ho, hi-ho, to Eagle Springs we go. Well, I have a traveling companion. Yeah, I don't blame you for gazing out the window. Lovely scenery, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Nothing like taking a little trip, eh? I don't mind telling you, I was a candidate for the Mayo Clinic before I got on this train. But it's going to be different now. Hi-ho, hi-ho, to Eagle Springs we go, and as we go, I sing ho-ho, hi-ho.
Hey, look at the sun coming from behind that cloud. Shining on the window that way, it's beginning to reflect your features. Yes, yes. There are your eyes. Nice eyes. There's your nose. Pretty nose. There's your mouth, your chin. Put them all together, and they add up.
Oh, no!
Hi-ho, hi-ho, to the Mayo Clinic we go.
As our Miss Brooks returns in just a moment, but first...
Dream girl, beautiful luster cream girl.
Tonight, yes, tonight, show him how much lovelier your hair can look after a luster cream shampoo. Luster cream, world's finest shampoo. No other shampoo in the world gives you Kay Dumit's magic blend of secret ingredients plus gentle lanolin. Not a soap, not a liquid, Luster Cream Shampoo leaves hair three ways lovelier. Fragrantly clean, free of loose dandruff, glistening with sheen, soft, manageable. Even in hardest water, Luster Cream lathers instantly. No special rinse needed after a Luster Cream Shampoo. So gentle, Luster Cream is wonderful even for children's hair. Tonight, yes, tonight, try Luster Cream Shampoo.
Dream girl, beautiful luster cream girl. You owe your crowning glory to a luster cream shampoo.
And now, once again, here is our Miss Brooks.
Well, after I found out the identity of Mr. Boynton's summer replacement on the train, I altered my plans for the weekend. Computing the wind velocity and the rate of speed at which we were traveling, I decided not to get off until the first stop. Then I took the next train back to town. And when I arrived at the depot, I ran right into Walter Denton.
Miss Brooks, what are you doing here? You should be halfway to Eagle Springs by now.
I was, Walter, but I found out that Mr. Boynton isn't going, and I couldn't bear the thought of letting him spend the weekend alone.
Alone? But Miss Brooks, Mr. Boynton got a last-minute cancellation and left for Eagle Springs 5 minutes ago.
What?
Sure, I drove him down.
Oh, great. Well, there's only one way I can celebrate the holiday now. I'll make an anonymous call to Mr. Conklin on Monday.
An anonymous call?
Yes, Walter. That's the 4th of July, and I'm really going to shoot off my mouth.
Next week, tune into another Our Miss Brooks show brought to you by Palmolive Soap, Your Beauty Hope, and Luster Cream Shampoo for soft, glamorous, caressable hair. Our Miss Brooks, starring Eve Arden, is produced by Larry Burns, written and directed by Al Lewis, with music by Wilbur Hatch. Here's a money-saving offer, men. A giant tube and a large tube of Palmolive Brushless Shaving Cream for 49 cents. Yes, a 70-cent value for only 49 cents. This offer is made solely to prove you, too, can get smoother, more comfortable shaves the Palmolive Brushless way. Just follow directions on the tube and treat your face to wonderful shaves. Yes, for extra shaving comfort at extra low cost, don't miss this Palmolive Brushless bargain. At drug and toilet goods counters, get both giant and large size Palmolive Brushless. A 70-cent value for only 49 cents.
Last year, forest fires laid waste 30 million acres of America's timberland. This year, only you can keep it from happening again. So when you or your family are camping, motoring in, or even near a forest area, remember these four rules. 1. Crush out, completely out, all cigarette, cigar, and pipe ashes. 2. Break matches in two after using. 3. Drown all campfires, then stir and drown again. 4. Before going near timber, ask fire authorities where campfires or even smoking are permitted. Remember, another 30 million acres will burn this year unless you are careful.
For mystery liberally sprinkled with laughs, listen to Mr. and Mrs. North, the exciting, fun-packed adventures of an amateur detective and his beautiful wife. Tune in Tuesday evening over most of these same stations. And be with us again at the same time next week for another comedy episode of Our Miss Brooks. Bob Lamond speaking. This is CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.
You are listening to the Old Time Radio Hour, broadcast each week over the World Wide Web with your host, Justine Ward. Cavalcade was a long-running show sponsored by DuPont Chemicals. It was a quality show that brought American history to life. This is a story about the creator of a song most Americans will hear over the 4th of July holiday, the Star-Spangled Banner. You'll hear about the dramatic events that led Francis Scott Key to write the song that has become very familiar to the world. Enjoy Cavalcade of America, Francis Scott Key, first broadcast February 2nd, 1938 on CBS.
The Cavalcade of America, presented by DuPont. This evening, the DuPont Cavalcade brings the story of Francis Scott Key and how he composed the Star-Spangled Banner, our national anthem, a tune that has inspired during the early days of our country and will always remain in the hearts of generations of Americans. DuPont, a company identified with the earliest days of our nation, presents the Cavalcade of America in an earnest endeavor to contribute something of permanent value and enjoyment to radio listeners, and also as a tribute to the research chemists in DuPont laboratories whose ideals are so well expressed by the phrase, better things for better living through chemistry. The DuPont Cavalcade moves forward. Frederick County, Francis Scott Key was born on August 1st, 1779. His father was John Ross Key, his mother, Anne Dagworthy Charlton. One of his young neighbors was a little girl who, like himself, was to contribute poetic, legendary renown to our country's flag, Barbara Fritching. As our story opens, Francis is 12 years old. He and Barbara and his sister Anne are on the veranda of the sedate Key mansion at Terra Rubra, a sunshiny day in July.
We're not playing here. Only sitting on the steps watching the soldiers on the lawn and waiting for General Washington to come out.
We'll be as quiet as mice, won't we, Barbara?
And right, Mammy, we will.
And besides, Mammy, Father wants us to help with the sermon this afternoon. I don't think he'd mind if we sat here very quietly during General Washington's speech.
Hey, you know something?
What now?
Well, I was thinking that when General Washington finishes his speech, the three of us ought to go up and present him with something.
Yes, but what?
Let's pick some of these honeysuckle and then lilies that grow up at the veranda.
Yes, we'll do that. You can give them to him, Frankie.
Me? Well, not. That's a girl's job.
Oh, but you can say something much nicer than he can.
Come on, Anne. Let's start picking the bouquet.
All right.
Yes, but why should I have to do all...
Here comes General Washington with your father now.
Look, the officers and men have put on their hats with the cockades of the Continental Army.
Oh, they love him, don't they?
Of course they do.
My countrymen, I am delighted to greet you in the midst of this beautiful Maryland countryside. But before I depart, I want to thank you and the people of Frederick County for the devotion and support I have always received from you. And now, I must be on my way. So once again, accept my gratitude and farewell. God bless you all.
3 cheers for General Washington. Hooray! Hooray!
Here's a bouquet, Francis. Come on, let's go up and give it to General Washington.
All right, give it to me. Now I really want to present it.
Remember, we're going to stand beside you, Frankie. Go ahead now. Go ahead.
General Washington. General Washington.
Yes?
We've gathered these flowers for you as a token of Maryland's love for you. And so we present them to you. Here.
Thank you. A very pretty speech, my lad. And a very pretty bouquet, too.
Barbara and I picked the flowers, General Washington.
Well, that's mighty nice all around. Are all these children yours, Lieutenant Key?
No, not all of them, I'm sorry to say, General Washington. This is Barbara Fritchie, and this is my daughter, Anne.
How do you do, General?
Well, I'm delighted to meet such lovely girls.
And this is my son, General Washington. My son, Francis Scott Key.
How do you do, sir?
Shadows of the verdant Maryland hills, beside the flashing crystal of its sparkling brooks, the boy Francis Scott Key grew to manhood. On January 19, 1802, he married Mary Lloyd and moved to Georgetown, where he entered into law partnership with his uncle. On one occasion, when they returned to his father's house, the Keys serve a banquet on the veranda of the mansion for their friends, Dr. Beans and Roger Brooke Tawney.
Well, dining on the veranda is unusual, but the occasion warrants it, I think.
It was a charming idea, Mrs. Key. I'm sure I speak for all your guests.
Well, Dr. Beans indeed speaks for all of us, Mary. The news that Stephen Decatur routed the pirates at Tripoli demands a festive celebration of some sort.
Wasn't it wonderful, though, Francis?
It must have been wonderful, Mary. When Roger Brooke Tawney agrees to any kind of unusual procedure, it must have been wonderful.
There's a faint sentiment of amusement in your tone, Frank, which I find myself wholly unable to support.
Spoken like the true lawyer and the great judge I'm sure you're going to be someday.
Sunday? I'm not a judge, of course, but I'm trying to be a lawyer now.
Did you two ever stop teasing each other? Did you ever see the light of it, Dr. Bean?
Oh, pay no attention to them, Miss Key. Roger Boxentani finds himself on the Supreme Court yet.
I'm sure of that. And so is Francis down deep. Oh, Francis, look. The field hands are coming across the lawn.
Of course they are, my dear. I've asked them to sing for us.
Oh, splendid. Their singing is famous all over Maryland.
I know.
You want us to sing now, Marquis?
Yes. Now listen, everybody.
Oh, nobody knows the trouble I see. Nobody knows but Jesus. Oh, nobody knows the trouble I've seen. Glory, hallelujah. Sometimes I'm up, sometimes I'm down. Oh, yes, Lord. Sometimes I'm almost to the ground. Oh, yes, Lord. Oh, nobody knows the trouble I've seen. Nobody knows but Jesus. Nobody knows the trouble I've seen.
Beautiful. Simply beautiful.
Yes, so it was.
Well, how do you know, Frank? You were scribbling on an envelope all during the singing.
Oh, Frank.
I couldn't help it. I fell to thinking about Stephen Decatur's victory, and I made up a little verse about it. Would you like to hear it?
Oh, sure, yes, yes. Frank. By all means, Mr. Key. Let us hear the verse you've written.
I wonder, do you all know the old tune, To Anacreon in Heaven?
Of course, you remember, Frank. Yes. We used to sing in college all the time. To Anacreon in heaven, where he sat in full glee. A few sons of harmony sent a petition that he there in fire and patron would be. When his answer arrived,
jolly old Grecian.
Frances, dear, who was Anacreon?
Well, he was a Greek poet, my darling. And after his death, his fellow poets set him up as a kind of demigod.
I think Frank is one of his disciples.
Well, I've just written a few lines commemorating our victory at Tripoli, which may be sung to that air. Here are the words. You sing it, Rod.
I'll try. Our fathers who stand on the summit of fame shall exultingly hear of their sons the proud story. How pale beamed the crescent, its splendor obscured by the light of the star-spangled flag of our nation.
Oh, yeah.
Star-spangled flag. That's good, Mr. Key. That's a fine description of our national banner.
Yes, it has a glitter to it, Francis.
Well, thanks. I fancied it myself. Go on, Roger. Finish it.
By the light of the star-spangled flag of our
nation.
Now,
don't change the key, Roger.
It's a hard tune to sing, even if it is one of my favorites. Now, let me finish it anyway. By the light of the star-spangled flag of our nation, in the full tide of song, let their fame roll along to the feast flowing board. Let us gratefully throng.
Come on, everybody, gather around so you can see the words.
Yeah.
Now, all together.
When mixed with the olive, the Lord shall wave and form a bright wreath for the brows of the
brave. So 10 years before he wrote the words that were to bring him fame, Francis Scott Key was already composing verses to the tune that was to become our national anthem and using the phrase, Star-Spangled Flag. Continuing the practice of law, Key distinguished himself on many occasions before Chief Justice John Marshall and the United States Supreme Court. Then came the night of August 24th, 1814, one of the darkest hours in American history, when the British burned the city of Washington. Key's wife, Mary, and his sister, Anne, now married to Roger Ringtoni, worried at the absence of their husband, watched with frightened eyes from the windows of the Key home in Georgetown across the bay of the Potomac River.
Oh, I'm frightened, Anne. I'm so worried. So am I. Mary, I've tried to assure myself that we'd hear if anything were wrong. Listen, what? Are those hoofbeats or is that my imagination? Oh. Somebody's riding up the road to the house. I hear two horses. We can't tell who it might be. Here, take this musket, Anne.
All right.
Don't be afraid to use it.
I will.
What are you doing with that gun?
Just
saying. Of course I'm safe here. Oh, now there, you mustn't cry.
If anything happened to you, we've been watching the fire so long here. Where are the president and Mrs. Madison?
Well, the president escaped and the cabinet in flight.
And Mrs. Madison barely had time to save a portrait of Washington before Coburn's Marines burned the White House.
Everybody's left the city.
Well, are we safe here?
I hope so. Oh, I was never so tired in all my life.
Oh, sit down over here. Right by me, dear. There now.
What's that?
Well, I'll have a look out the window. Frank, I can see a whole crowd, a mob of people coming up the road.
The British?
No, they've marched with drums and marched with music.
Well, let's go out on the porch and find out what's up.
All right.
Yeah, I'll be careful.
Don't be afraid. It's our people.
Hey there. Any one of you. Where are you going? We're heading over to Baltimore.
Our homes are all afire. We've got to get out of Washington.
You better come with us. No time to waste.
We're going to rally at Baltimore and make a stand at Fort McHenry. Is that you, Colonel Skinner?
Yes, Mr. Key. You'd better join us.
Isn't there any safety here?
Not a chance.
Is that cannon, Colonel Skinner?
No, Mrs. Key. That's thunder. There's a storm brewing.
Well, come on inside, all of you. Out of the rain. And let the British catch us.
Yes, what is it?
Word from the capital, sir. The British are on their way to capture Dr. Bean.
Dr. Bean? Why, he's an old friend of ours. What for?
Oh, they say he had some of the British soldiers arrested. They're going to make an example of him.
General Skinner, the doctor's an old man. We've got to stop them.
You're right, Chief.
Oh, but Francis, you can't go. Please, not in all this storm. But who's going to look after us here? Didn't you hear him say that it wasn't safe to stay here?
Get me my great coat, Mary. Roger, take the girls over to the old mansion at Terra Rubra. What? They'll be safe there.
Yeah, but Frank...
We haven't time to argue, Roger. Please do as I say.
Goodbye, Mary. I'll be back as soon as I can.
Oh, thank you. Just care of yourself.
Galloping off into the storm toward the flaming horizon of the burning city of Washington sped Francis Scott Key. Too late, he and Colonel John Skinner reached the home of Dr. Bean, found the place deserted, with mute evidence of the doctor's capture. And so, after conferring with the Secretary of War, James Monroe, the two men embarked under the flag of truce for His Majesty's ship Tonah, flagship of Admiral Coburn's fleet, drawn up to lay siege to Fort McHenry. We find them discussing the matter of Dr. Bean's release with the Admiral in his cabin.
Gentlemen, I'm of the opinion that instead of permitting Dr. Beans to go, I should have the scoundrel hanged from a yardarm. You know he urged a group of his townsmen to throw some of our British soldiers into jail.
But don't you realize that those men were behaving in a most outrageous fashion? That their actions were a disgrace to the British uniform? They weren't soldiers that day. They were marauders, Admiral Coburn.
Dr. Beans only took precautionary measures, Admiral. That's absolutely all.
And I think, sir, you ought to show some leniency in this matter in view of the doctor's impartial treatment of British wounded as well as Americans. The man is old, Admiral. And unless outrageously provoked, I would say he is the most peaceful of our citizens.
Well, as I see it, we gain little by holding Dr. Bean. All right, gentlemen, I'll see that he's released.
Thank you, Admiral Coburn. Then we'll return to shore at once.
As to that, I'm afraid it will be most unwise, Mr. Keene. We must take all steps to prevent any information about our position here, naturally. You must have observed certain preparations on deck.
Yes, we couldn't help noticing a certain activity.
Yes, quite so. That's why I'm going to detain you during the bombardment of Fort McHenry. I'll transfer you both and Dr. Beans to my son's ship Surprise for the duration of the attack. You will be put ashore after we capture Baltimore.
Capture Baltimore? Aren't you taking a lot for granted, Admiral?
Where you're standing, Mr. Key, you can easily see out that portal there.
Yes?
Well, perhaps you can see that flag over the battlements of Fort McHenry.
Yes. Looks rather proud flying there in the sunset.
Well, Mr. Key, proud as it may look to you now, tomorrow morning you won't see that banner over the fort. So take a good last look at it.
Quietude of sunset, Key, Skinner, and Dr. Bean rode through the purpling waters of the harbor to the British ship Surprise. And as the sun dipped beneath the horizon, the Americans standing near a gunwale began a lonely vigil to watch their country's flag. The British frigates reeled as broadside after broadside thundered across the harbor, lighting the night with fire. Then, sometime before dawn, on the morning of September 14, 1814, silence fell over the harbor.
Can it be that the fort held out?
I don't see how it could. That was a terrific cannonade.
I've strained my eyes pretty nearly out of their sockets all night, trying to see that flag.
I couldn't see it at all.
I could see it once in a while through my telescope.
If the fort falls, what do you suppose they'll do to us?
I'm not thinking what it'll mean to us. I'm wondering what it'll mean to the United States. Washington burned, Baltimore in the hands of the enemy.
Don't even suggest it, Skinner.
We have to face the facts, man.
The bombardment seems to have stopped.
Perhaps they've captured the fort.
No. Perhaps the British have given up. If that flag is still waving, we haven't lost. And I won't lose hope.
I wish I had your optimism, Francis.
Seems to be getting lighter.
Yes. It's the dawn. Now we'll know.
I can see the fort now, I think. Yes, come over to the rail. Look there, Keith.
How about the flag?
Give me your telescope, Skinner. I'll see for myself. Yes. Yes, it's there. It's still flying. The fort's held out.
dusk on Fort McHenry had failed. Key and his companions went ashore. After they separated, Key went to a hotel, where he perfected certain notes he had taken, fashioning them into the ringing verses of the Star-Spangled Banner. Before the day was out, handles of the poem circulated throughout Baltimore. And late that night, in an old inn near the Holiday Street Theater in Baltimore...
Everything's going to be all right now, as long as Baltimore's safe.
Yes, I guess we showed when we went business at McHenry.
Say, any of you boys see one of them handbills about the flag?
Oh, no, I saw one this morning.
What handbill?
Well, where you been all day, stranger?
I just got in town this afternoon. I didn't see any handbills about the flag.
Well, somebody's written a powerful poem about our flag. Here, I got a copy of it right here in my pocket.
Show it to him, too.
All right. I'll read it to you. It's called The Defense of Fort McHenry. Yeah. And here's a foreword printed at the top of the handbill. Listen, will you, everybody? Listen just a minute. The next song was composed under the following circumstances. A gentleman had endeavored, under a flag of truce, to obtain the release of a friend of his from the British fleet. He was not permitted to return, lest the intended attack on Baltimore should be disclosed, and was compelled to witness the bombardment of Fort McHenry. He watched the flag at the fort through the night with an anxiety that can be better felt than described by the light of the bombshells. And at early dawn, his eye was again greeted by the proudly waving flag of his country.
Oh, I see, and the poem follows, eh?
Yes.
See it. Oh, say, can you see?
Yes, it can be sung to the tune of Anacreon in Heaven. You know that song they've been singing so long around the colonies.
Sure, everybody knows the tune.
I used to hear my father sing it.
He used to sing it in England.
Yes, the author must have known it. The rhythm of the words fits the tune perfectly.
Free and the home of the brave. Great. What a poem. Say, who wrote this anyway?
Yes, we all noticed that. The author didn't sign his name.
Must be a pretty modest fellow, huh?
Well, if I had written anything as fine as that, you can bet your boots I'd sign my name.
Yeah, one of the soldiers at McHenry told me a fellow named Key wrote the poem.
Key?
I wonder who he is.
Key? I know him. He's a lawyer. Oh, great fellow, Frank Key. He took a case of mine once, but I couldn't get him to let me pay a fee.
That's the man, all right. Captain Nicholson over at the fort knows him well. Sort of a relative of his.
Well, I'd sure like to shake his hand.
Well, you can. He just came in the inn. See him over there talking to Ferdy Durang?
Well, I wish we could get him to stop at our table here.
The only way to do it is to ask him. Mr. Key.
Yes? Oh, hello, Taylor.
I do.
You all know Ferdinand Durang, don't you?
Oh, yes. Mr. Key.
Yeah?
Will you answer a question for us?
Well, if it doesn't incriminate me.
No, this one won't. Did you write that poem about the flag? The one on all those handbills?
If I answer the question, will you all do something for me?
Why, yes,
all right, then. I did.
Well, certainly wonderful, Mr. Key.
Now, here's what I want to ask you to do. I've never heard it sung.
Well, gentlemen, Mr. Francis Scott Key is with us tonight. We've just found out from him that he wrote the poem about our flag. He watched it during the attack on McHenry. What do you say we all sing it for him? Ferdinand Durang is our best singer, so he'll lead it. And we'll all join in the refrain. Joe, you play the fiddle. All right, Ferdy, get up on that chair and sing us the song of the Star-Spangled Banner.
Can you see by the dawn's early light what so proudly we hail at the twilight's last gleaming, whose broad stripes and bright stars through the perilous fight o'er the ramparts we watched were so gallant. On the rocket's red glare, the bombs bursting in air, gave proof through the night that our flag was still there.
All right, everybody together now.
Oh,
Yeah!
devotion of the people of this country to our flag is no better symbolized than in the fervent stanzas of the Star-Spangled Banner. More than a century has elapsed since it was written, but it has always remained in the hearts of American citizens as the official national anthem, although it wasn't until March 3rd, 1931, that it was so designated by a special act of Congress. Francis Scott Key died January 11, 1843. Fort McHenry became a national shrine, and on the 100th anniversary of the composition of the Star-Spangled Banner, a red, white, and blue buoy was anchored in Baltimore Harbor near the spot where the song was written. This evening, DuPont pays tribute to our national flag and to the ever-living memory of the patriot who immortalized it in the Star-Spangled Banner, Francis Scott Key, inspiring leader in the cavalcade of America. Now, moving from the past to the present, we quote from a recent newspaper item.
Fort Madison, Iowa. A new manufacturing unit to supply the Midwest area with paints, enamels, and industrial finishes will soon be put into operation here by the DuPont Company.
And here is still another newspaper announcement.
San Francisco, California. The South San Francisco Paint and Varnish Plant of the DuPont Company, which started operations here 2 years ago, is being expanded by the erection of additional buildings.
And so it goes. Another industry moving forward. More jobs being created in plants built to make new and better finishes for America's needs. And behind it all is the work of the research chemist. From fine lacquers for dolls and vanity cases to paints for homes and the rugged Duco and Dulux finishes required for automobiles, locomotives, and ocean liners, that's the range of finishes now made by DuPont. 20 years ago, DuPont had only one paint plant. Today, 7 DuPont plants in 7 cities are making finishes for every purpose. These plants are really local industries, manned by local people and serving territorial needs. That they exist today and employ thousands and are still expanding is due largely to constant chemical improvement. DuPont finishes are tested in laboratories, on outdoor exposure farms, and in actual use under all conditions to ensure their resistance to the severest kind of punishment. And in many cases, increased demand and improved manufacturing methods have enabled DuPont to maintain its policy of passing savings through cost reductions along to the consumer. This means more factories and more employment, which helps everybody in the country. It also means new and improved products at constantly lower prices. This is what the DuPont Company means by its pledge, better things for better living through chemistry. The story of Oliver Wendell Holmes, a portrait of an American poet, physician, scientist, and humorist, will be the subject of our broadcast when next week, at the same time, DuPont again presents The Cavalcade of America. This is the Columbia Broadcasting System.
You have been listening to the Old Time Radio Hour, broadcast each week over the World Wide Web. You can subscribe at no charge through Apple Podcasts, Podbean, or RSS. Thank you so much for listening. We hope you can join us again next week for another hour of entertainment from the golden age of radio. Until then, this is your host, Justine Ward, saying, so long for a while.